Marguerite. Prefatory letter. Publish Marguerite, dear Monsieur André Koch, if you so desire, but pray relieve me from all responsibility in the matter. It would argue too much literary conceit on my part were I anxious to restore it to the light of day. It would argue, perhaps, still more did I endeavor to keep it in obscurity. You will not succeed in wresting it for long from the eternal oblivion whereunto it is destined. Amy, how old it is. I had lost all recollection of it. I have just read it over, without fear or favor, as I should a work unknown to me, and it does not seem to me that I have lighted upon a masterpiece. It would ill beseem me to say more about it than that. My only pleasure as I read it was derived from the proof it afforded that, even in those far-off days, when I was writing this little trifle, I was no great lover of the Third Republic with its pinchbeck virtues, its militarist imperialism, its ideas of conquest, its love of money, its contempt for the handicrafts, its unswerving predilection for the unlovely. Its leaders caused me terrible misgivings. And the event has surpassed my apprehensions. But it was not in my calculations to make myself a laughingstock, by taking Marguerite as a text for generalizations on French politics of the late 19th and early 20th centuries. The specimens of type and the woodcuts you have shown me promise a very comely little book. Believe me, dear Monsieur Koch. Yours sincerely. Anatole France. La Bichelery, 16th of April, 1920. A. Marguerite. A. 5th July. As I left the Palais Bourbon at 5 o'clock that afternoon, it rejoiced my heart to breathe in the sunny air. The sky was bland, the river gleamed, the foliage was fresh and green. Everything seemed to whisper an invitation to idleness. Along the Pont de la Concorde, in the direction of the Champs-Élysées, Victorias and Landaus kept rolling by. In the shadow of the lowered carriage hoods, women's faces gleamed clear and radiant, and I felt a thrill of pleasure as I watched them flash by like hopes vanishing and reappearing in endless succession. Every woman as she passed by left me with an impression of light and perfume. I think a man, if he is wise, will not ask much more than that of a beautiful woman. A gleam and a perfume. Many a love affair leaves even less behind it. Moreover, that day, if Fortune herself had run with her wheelie spinning before my very nose along the pavement of the Pont de la Concorde, I should not have so much as stretched forth an arm to pluck her by her golden hair. I lacked nothing that day, all was mine. It was 5 o'clock and I was free till dinner time. Yes, free. Free to saunter at will, to breathe at my ease for 2 hours, to look on at things and not have to talk, to let my thoughts wander as I listed. All was mine, I say again. My happiness was making me a selfish man. I gazed at everything about me as though it were all a picture, a splendid moving pageant, arranged for my own particular delectation. It seemed to me as though the sun were shining for me alone, as though it were pouring down its torrents of flame upon the river for my special gratification. I somehow thought that all this motley throng was swarming gaily around me for the sole purpose of animating, without destroying, my solitude. And so I almost got the notion that the people about me were quite small, that their apparent size was only an illusion, that they were but puppets, the sort of thoughts a man has when he has nothing to think about. But you must not be angry on that score with a poor man who has had his head crammed chock full for 10 years on end with politics and lawmaking and is wearing away his life with those trivial preoccupations men call affairs of state. In the popular imagination, a law is something abstract, without form or color. For me, a law is a green baize table, sealing wax, paper, pens, inkstains, green shaded candles, books bound in calf, papers yet damp from the printers and all smelling of printer's ink, conversations in green papered offices, files, bundles of documents, a stuffy smell, speeches, newspapers. A law, in short, is all the 101 things, the 101 tasks you have to fulfill at all hours, the gray and gentle hours of the morning, the white hours of middle day, the purple hours of evening, the silent, meditative hours of night, tasks which leave you no soul to call your own and rob you of the consciousness of your own identity. Yes, it is so. I have left my own ego behind me there. It is scattered up and down among all sorts of memoranda and reports. Industrious junior clerks have put away a parcel of it in each one of their beautiful green filing cases. And so I have had to go on living without my ego, which, moreover, is how all politicians have to live. But an ego is a strangely subtle thing. And wonder of wonders. Mine came back to me just now on the Pont de la Concorde. 'Twas he without a doubt and, would you believe it, he had not suffered so very much from his sojourn among those musty papers. The very moment he arrived I found myself again, I recognized my own existence, whereof I had not been conscious these 10 years. Ha ha! Said I to myself, Since I exist, I am just as well pleased to know it. Behold, I will set forth here and now to improve this new acquaintance by strolling, with a lover's thoughts in my heart, down the Champs-Élysées. And this is why I am here, at this hour, beneath the sculptured steeds of Marly, more high-spirited than those aristocratic quadrupeds themselves. This is why I am setting foot in the avenue whose entrance is marked by their hoofs of stone perpetually poised in air. The carriages flow past endlessly, like a somber scintillating stream of lava or molten asphalt, whereon the hats of the women seem borne along like so many flowers, and like everything else one sees in Paris, at once extravagant and pretty. I light up a cigar and, looking at nothing, behold everything. So intense is my joy that it scares me.